Hello and welcome back to Drinking on the Last Frontier here on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna. I'm your host, Bill Howell. For this month's beer style segment, I'm going to depart a bit from our standard format in response to a request from a listener to talk a bit about the beers of Scandinavia. So I'm going to talk about the beer scene in each of the four countries, Denmark, Norway, Sweden, and Finland, before going into some depth about a style of traditional beer unique to the region, Sati. In Denmark, lager rules in this Scandinavian country, which makes it all the more interesting that Denmark may have given us the English word for ale. Some scholars believe that ale comes from the Danish word øl for beer, with the Germanic base alu, bitter. Others attribute it to the Vikings, who sailed and conquered far and wide, bringing their word for bitter, alt, with them. Regardless of which story is true, the history of beer is most certainly lengthy in Denmark, which has left a stronger impression on the global beer scene than many people might think. As was the case in most early Europe, women were the ones who brewed beer, which was considered to be a domestic activity until religious orders took over the practice in the Middle Ages. The end of the Middle Ages saw the rise of the country's first beer guild, created in 1525 in Copenhagen. Guild members were responsible for producing beer for the king and his military with a daily ration of 2.6 gallons per person. Meanwhile, in the countryside, women resumed their work as brewers. Low in alcohol, sweet, malty, and dark, Hedvedal, white beer, was the most common beer brewed in the countryside. Its name comes from the white malt used to make the beer. The malt is lighter in color because the barley isn't fully matured before it's malted. By the mid-1800s, crisp, clean lager, the antithesis of Hedvedal, was all the rage in Denmark, so many of the country's newest breweries focused on producing it. One such brewer, Jacob Jacobsen, brought lager yeast back from Bavaria, not an easy feat in a time when refrigeration didn't readily exist to preserve it. He opened a brewery in Valby, just outside Copenhagen, where the water was clean. The area also featured a berg or hill that he could dig cellars into to lager his beer. Jacobsen decided to name the brewery after his son, Carl, and the hill that had proved so convenient for his brewing enterprise. That's literally what Carlsberg means, Carl's Hill. Carlsberg Group is now one of the world's largest brewing companies. By the 1870s, 200 breweries existed in the Danish countryside and 16 in Copenhagen. Tuborg, opened in 1873, produced Denmark's first Pilsner. Carlsberg didn't make Pilsner until decades later, in 1904. By the turn of the 20th century, Denmark had nearly 400 breweries, and Pilsner had become, and has stayed, the most popular style in the country. Macro-brewed lager has long dominated in Denmark, but the craft beer revolution is picking up. In 1990, brewpub Brygget Apollo opened in Copenhagen, reintroducing Danes to ales. 5 years later, the first Danish-brewed IPA arrived on the scene, courtesy of Brockhaus Oldbukken beer shop in Danish, which opened in 2005 and has gone on to become one of the world's most famous bottle shops, with an uncanny ability to acquire hard-to-get beers such as Three Floyds Brewing Company's Dark Lord from the United States and Chantillon's Blueberry Lambic from Belgium. Childhood friends Mikael Borg-Bjergso and Christian Klarup Keller are probably Denmark's best-known craft brewers, brewing under the name Mikeller. They hit international fame in 2006 with their oatmeal stout named Beer Geek Breakfast. Mikeller has since opened a brewery in San Francisco and partnered with Three Floyds in Indiana to open War Pigs Brew Pub in Copenhagen. In other words, Danish craft beer is finding its way into the minds and glasses of beer enthusiasts all over the world. Now let's move on to Norway. In a country where every farm once had a brew house, the current scene is a mishmash of high taxes, the seasonal traditional Jul, or Christmas beer, and exponential growth in the craft beer market. Breweries are found all over, from the oldest surviving brewery, Oz, to the poetically named Nagano, which translates to Naked Island, and the up-and-coming microbreweries like Skuespilleren in Oslo and the geographically isolated Eger in Flam. The annual beer production in Norway is 2.2 million U.S. barrels, with an annual average consumption of 138 12-ounce beers per person. The average price of a 12-ounce beer in Norway is just over 90 Norwegian kroners, or about $10.50 U.S. In Sweden, beer has been brewed for millennia, despite the heavy regulations inhibiting it for most of the 20th century. Sweden is home to historic beer styles, the sweet, low-alcohol Svedrica and the spicy homebrew favorite Gotlandsdrica, but American IPA reigns supreme these days. International collaborations with many of the 150 or so Swedish breweries are all the rage, making Sweden a promising craft beer destination. The annual beer production in Sweden is 4 million U.S. barrels, with an average annual consumption of 149 12-ounce beers per person. The average price of a 12-ounce beer in Sweden is just over 68 Swedish kroners, or about $7.45 U.S. Let's move on to Finland. Finland's national epic, the Kalevala, dedicates more poetic lines to beer than the origin of humankind. Enter Sati, a potent farmhouse ale of medieval origins that's made with baker's yeast and brewed in a hollowed-out aspen log lined with juniper twigs and berries. Sati is so finished that the beer style has a European Union-protected designation of origin. Recent reforms of the country's notoriously strict alcohol laws have helped its small but vibrant beer scene. The annual beer production of Finland is 3.4 million U.S. barrels, with an average annual consumption of 221 12-ounce beers per person. The average price of a 12-ounce beer is just over 6 euros, or about $6.50 U.S. Now let's talk a bit more in depth about Sati, one of the world's oldest commercially brewed styles of beer. The earliest written records of Sati only date back a few hundred years to the late 18th century, but casks of the traditional Finnish style were found aboard a sunken Viking ship dating back to the 9th century. Some historians even claim ancient beer styles like Sati were the motivation behind the development of agriculture in Scandinavia. Traditionally, Sati was enjoyed during special occasions like weddings and harvest festivals, and in some cases it even took on a mystical persona. Weaker versions of Sati were used as refreshment for village workers. Despite Finland's lengthy beer story, commercial breweries were not historically the norm. Many traditional Finnish communities were small villages without the population needed to support a brewery. Instead, families and villages brewed for themselves on the local farm with readily available ingredients. As was the case in many cultures, women were the primary brewers in Finland's past, and it was common for mother to pass her Sati recipe to her daughters. Even with a few rocky patches in its history, particularly around World War II, Sati was able to avoid a once popular but now forgotten style from beer's early days. The Sati Society of Finland preserves the tradition through the education and celebration of the style with an annual homebrew and commercial Sati competition and festival. Some American craft brewers are even trying their hand at the style. As a farmhouse style with extensive history, Sati has evolved throughout time into a style with quite a bit of variation. Traditionally, Sati was brewed entirely with ingredients available near the farm. Generally, this meant a grist made entirely of malted barley, a heap of juniper branches with berries and sometimes other available herbs and spices. The malt and sometimes the juniper berries provided the fermentables, with most of the prevalent flavor coming from the juniper. However, as a farm style, ingredients change from one village to the next. For example, the southern Tammasaari region of Finland was known for including raspberries in its Sati. Over time, additional ingredients were incorporated. Rye, oats, and some kiln malts were used to provide additional malt flavors and allow the color to range from light straw to amber, though the grist typically contained 80 to 90% malted barley. Around the 14th century, hops made their way onto the Finnish beer scene. They were thought to be used not only for flavor and aroma, but for their antiseptic qualities. It wasn't uncommon to make two different strengths of Satis from the first and second runnings of the mash. The first runnings made for strong Sati, intended for the male villagers, while the second runnings created a weaker Sati for the women and priests. As with many ancient ales, fermentation was initially seen as some sort of magic. Before yeast was commercially available in Finland towards the end of the 19th century, wild yeast infection was relied on for the initial fermentation. If a preferred yeast was found, the cake was saved for later use, much the same way homebrewers do today. The yeast cake would either be collected in a clean jar and stored in a cool river or well, or dried and wrapped. Today, baker's yeast is the preferred strain when fermenting sati, though bread yeast do vary widely from one country to the next. Some sati examples have a slight sour quality, which historically likely came from infection, but now can be intentionally created by the brewer. Lactobacillus can be added through sour infected wort or starter, or it can be created by using a sourdough yeast culture. After fermentation is just about done, the sati was traditionally enjoyed straight from the fermenter. There may be some natural carbonation from active or secondary fermentation, but generally it is seen as an uncarbonated style to be enjoyed soon after fermentation is done. The final product is typically a juniper-forward ale with some malt sweetness, a hint of hop flavor and bitterness, and perhaps a subtle sourness. Unfortunately, given its perishable nature, there are no commercially produced examples of sati in Alaska, though it's easily within the abilities of your average homebrewer. If you don't want to brew your own, you'll likely have to travel to Finland to experience this unique style of beer. Up next on Drinking on the Last Frontier is Beer Travels, where we'll be talking about visiting the city of San Francisco. This is your host, Bill Howell, on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. Hello, and welcome back to Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. It's time for this month's Beer Travels. We'll be talking about San Francisco. For many beer lovers of a certain age, including yours truly, Anchor Brewing in San Francisco was their mother church for discovering craft beer. Anchor, established in 1896 and famous for brewing Anchor Steam beer, became America's original craft brewery in 1965 when Fritz Maytag rescued and renovated it, thereby making the San Francisco Bay Area the epicenter of the American beer renaissance. Today, San Francisco is home to over a dozen breweries, while the larger Bay Area tallies more than 60. For the beer lover exploring San Francisco, a car is a hindrance rather than an asset. Given the city's compactness, it's much easier to proceed by foot and or mass transit. Here are some of my top recommendations for places to enjoy a good beer. Toronado. One of the oldest true beer bars in the country, the venerable Toronado boasts over 45 taps and a hand-pumped cask and pints of amazing beers. This place can be a zoo on weekends and evenings, so if you're looking to enjoy your beer in a mellow atmosphere, try to visit during off-peak hours. Sales are cash only, so be sure to bring plenty of the folding stuff, not plastic. Special events that are held each February during San Francisco Beer Week make this Lower Haight icon a veritable institution. The Alembec. You won't go dry on Upper Haight either. From publican Dave McLean, who also founded the venerable Magnolia Pub and Brewery, this cocktail-centric small plate destination near Golden Gate Park won't let you down. Don't let the small number of taps fool you. Between the drafts and Alembec's usual plus vintage bottle list, this is a gustatory zenith for the small cluster of folks who actually fit inside. Zeitgeist. Not everything is about elevating the beer drinking experience or challenging your palate. Lock up your messenger bike and order by the pitcher at this beer garden in the Mission. Sometimes it's about soaking up rays and tamales when Virginia the tamale lady pops in, or simply having everyone enjoy easy drinking Anchor Steam or Bear Republic Racer 5 IPA all day long while parked outside at end-to-end picnic tables. The City Beer Store. The couple that runs this bottle shop, Craig and Beth Wathan, take painstaking care to stock the widest selection of hard-to-find beers from the most interesting breweries, with no fewer than 300 bottles on hand. Patrons can drink their newfound bounty for a buck corkage fee, and since doubling in size from tiny to just small, they've tripled their taps to 15, inviting brewers from far and near for sipping session takeovers on most Thursdays. It's no wonder that breweries like The Brewery and Cascade alchemize propriety beers for their anniversaries. La Trappe. This place is a personal favorite of mine. Located in North Beach, which feels like Little Italy, this basement gastropub is all Belgium, down to some of the best mussels and frites. Once your eyes adjust, ogle the tap list that runs nearly 20 deep, mostly from Belgium, with nods to Belgian-inspired breweries like Southern California's Brugerie West. The leather-bound, multi-page bottle list make you feel like you should sport a smoking jacket just perusing it. Beware that if a bottle of lambic you're eyeing at the onset says 30, that's not the cost, but the page number you'll find it on. The Church Key. This other North Beach hangout doesn't specialize in beer pairings unless you count Wednesdays, when DJ Slowpoke spins Motown and the like for beer with soul. That it's not exactly public transpo friendly ensures you're never cramped for space, and when the beer geek population does swell, there's always the chill upstairs lounge. Owner Jason King has the draft and bottle list on permanent rotation, so 1 week it's Marin Point's Ray's Porter and Ballast Point Sculpin IPA, the next it's High Water Campfire Stout and Pacific Brew Lab's Squid Ink IPA. The Monk's Kettle. The Monk's Kettle, which Christian Albert and Nat Cutler co-founded in San Francisco's Mission District in December of 2007, hosts 24 drafts and around 180 bottles, including 10 to 15 vintage selections in the subterranean cellar of the extremely intimate space. The seating capacity is just 45. Quote, "There are many factors that go into making choices for the beer list, but essentially it boils down to quality and balance," says Albertson, who is also the establishment's beer program director. "Balance means flavor profiles, but also format, size, price, and different versions of a style." End quote. Square in the middle of the bar, framing shelves of proprietary glassware, is an antique wooden mantle bookended by gape-mouthed lions. A handful of tables line the opposite wall. The bar's limited space is conducive to community. The Abbott's Cellar. As if debuting with Monk's Kettle didn't impress enough, what with the Gastro Tavern's 24-plus taps to wash down severely elevated pub grub, the team unveiled this gourmet restaurant not far from their Mission District roots. The shelves behind the bar are steady in glassware, and the bottle cellar numbers into triple digits, but that doesn't keep the Chantillon and Sam Adams utopias from popping out. Ordering the price fix beer pairing menu is the right call. Fat Angel. Before a show at the legendary Fillmore Concert Hall or after a set at Yoshi's Snazzy Jazz Club, pop into this small Fillmore neighborhood space that packs an impressive draft beer and wine menu. It's always heavy on Belgian ales, but double IPAs from Port Brewing and North Bay's Moylan bring the hops. The owners are usually on hand to assist with the beverage and food menus, the latter of which consists of small plates, including charcuterie and butters. Yes, apparently we now have artisanal butters, including savory maple bacon and sweet chocolate cinnamon. That's a quick overview of some of the best places to drink beer in San Francisco. In addition to these great bars, you can also visit many of the breweries operating the city. However, if you want to tour historic Anchor Brewing, be advised that it's so popular that the tours book up weeks in advance. You can reserve a spot on the brewery's website. Personally, I've never been able to swing a tour when I was in town, so it's still on my bucket list. Time for another break, and we'll be right back in a few minutes with Drinking on the Last Frontier here on KDLL 91.9 FM Kenai Soldotna. Hello and welcome back to our final segment on Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here on KDLL 91.9 FM Kenai Soldotna. It's time for this month's Beer Gear. On this month's Beer Gear, I want to tell you about another newly published beer book. This one is titled Barrel Age Stout and Selling Out, Goose Island, Anheuser-Busch, and How Craft Beer Became Big Business. It was written by Josh Noel, the beer and travel writer for the Chicago Tribune newspaper. For those of you who might not remember, Goose Island opened as a family-owned Chicago brew pub in the late 1980s, and it soon became one of the most inventive breweries in the world. In that age of light, bland, and cheap beers, founder John Hall and his son Greg brought real European beer flavors to an American audience. With distribution in 24 states, 2 brew pub locations, and status as one of the 20 biggest breweries in the United States, Goose Island became an American success story and was a champion of craft beer. Then, on March 28, 2011, The Hall sold the brewery to Anheuser-Busch InBev, maker of Budweiser, the least craft-like beer imaginable. The sale forced the industry to reckon with craft beer's mainstream appeal and a popularity few had envisioned. Josh Noel himself broke the news of the sale in the Chicago Tribune, and he covered the resulting backlash from Chicagoans and beer fanatics across the country as the discussion escalated into an intellectual craft beer war. Anheuser-Busch InBev has since bought other craft breweries to add to its so-called high-end division. In some ways, the story of Goose Island is a tragic tale. The Halls established Goose Island with the best of intentions and lived to see it become the very thing they hated, another corporate beer brand. Amid all the outcry, a deeper question continues to be asked. How should a brewery grow? Noel addresses this issue through numerous personal anecdotes from industry leaders and his own personal observations. It's a fascinating story and a great read, so I recommend it strongly to anyone who is at all interested in the craft beer business. You can find it on Amazon in paperback and Kindle editions. Well, that's it for this month's Drinking on the Last Frontier. Hope you've enjoyed the show. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here on KDLL 91.9 FM Kenai Soldotna. Before we go to our closing quote, I'd like to remind our listeners, if anyone out there has anything that they'd like me to address, a question about beer or anything like that, please feel free to send it in. And this month's show, we dealt with Scandinavian beers at a listener's request. I hope you enjoyed it, Alan. If you have anything else that you'd like me to talk about, please let us know. This month's closing beer quote is from Martin Luther, who nailed his famous 95 Theses to the door of All Saints Church in Wittenberg on the 31st of October, 1517, effectively kicking off the Protestant Reformation. Quote, "Whoever drinks beer, he is quick to sleep. Whoever sleeps long does not sin. Whoever does not sin enters heaven. Thus, let us drink beer." We'll see you next month here on Drinking on the Last Frontier. Cheers.
Beers of Alaska, beer on the last frontier. Beers of Alaska, learn about them here.
IPAs, ales and stouts, pilsners, porters too. Microbrew, homebrew, any craft you choose. Look before you leap, sip before you drink. What you isn't always what you think.
Beers of Alaska, beer on the last frontier. Beers of Alaska, learn about them here.
Well, don't settle for the first, for it might be the worst. Cleanse your palate before you quench your thirst.
Beers of Alaska, beer on the last frontier. Beers of Alaska, learn about them here. Beers of Alaska, beer on the last frontier. Beers of Alaska, learn about them here.
Shaylin Cochran here, reporter and host at KDLL. You know, one of the things I like most about public radio is the time we get just to learn, explore, and talk. Join us Wednesday mornings at 10 a.m. to be a part of the Kenai Conversation, 60 minutes dedicated to learning, exploring, and talking right here on KDLL 91.9 FM Kenai Soldotna, public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula.